Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right, hello.
Hi.
Nice place.
Welcome to hell.
Oh, it's not that bad.
We must feed.
You got a what?
We must.
Pull to open.
Pull to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
Nothing in the universe can escape it. Everything just gets pulled inside and crushed.
Disgust.
What? What don't they know?
This time there's three of us.
Stand by, everyone. Buckle down. We have incoming. And it's a big one.
Here comes the drums!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Pull to Open, the ongoing quest to watch all of the television show Doctor Who, every single minute of it in entirely random order. My name is Chris Taylor.
And my name is Pete Paschal. And normally, this is the part where I say Chris and I are a couple of guys. We're two journalists who happen to be longtime fans of Doctor Who. Two people excited to talk about a really exciting Doctor Who story this week. But this time I'm not going to do that. And there is a reason I'm not talking about the two of us listeners. And because, Chris, what don't they know?
We are many. We are legion. And this time there's three of us. Welcome to Ellie Blackwood from many social media planets and speculative fiction planets. Ellie, thank you for joining us. Please introduce yourself to the fine folks, the Pull to Open audience.
Hey, everybody. My name is Ellie Blackwood. I would describe myself as a speculative fiction writer in progress, a massive space nerd, and a maker of TikToks where I overanalyze Doctor Who.
Fabulous. Nice. And I would describe you also as a Doctor Who influencer extraordinaire, because we certainly first discovered you. we ran into you many, many times on our TikTok feed, and your takes are so good. I just got to say that you have a lot of takes on characters, on stories, and I would find myself liking, occasionally commenting, and then after a while, like, we've got to get this girl on the show. Like, she's just amazing. So welcome to the show. But how did you start to become, I guess, this sort of social media influencer specializing in Doctor Who?
That's a really great question. So I think the first video I ever made about Doctor Who was actually about a year and a half ago. I was really interested in the progression of the Doctor's character throughout New Who, because I'd just done a full Doctor Who rewatch in 2022 of New Who, not of Classic. Okay. And watching it all together for the first time was really interesting, because it made me realize just how much character work carries through the entire run of, especially the 9th through 12th Doctors. So I made a TikTok about that, and barely anybody saw it, but it was really fun. And then a few months later, I had been really getting into the Doctor Who soundtrack, so thinking about character themes, musical themes. And so I made a video where I played the themes for each Doctor. So the Doctor's theme from the 9th Doctor, the Doctor Forever from the 10th Doctor, and then he also has a variation of the Doctor's theme. I am the Doctor for the 11th Doctor, and a good man, for 12. And 13 for 13. And so I made a TikTok where I played those, because I thought, it could be cool to show people how to recognize these when they're watching the show. And it kind of blew up. So after that first video blew up, I made a few other videos about the music of Doctor Who. So I talked about the New Who Companions themes. I talked about the villain themes, the Masters themes. And then from there, I started making videos about other kinds of Doctor Who subjects. I did in-depth character arc videos about each of the New Who Doctors. I think my most popular video is so far is the one that I did about the 10th Doctor's character arc.
Fancy but, that. The 10th Doctor yes. popular?
Yes. The 10th Doctor popular? What? My video, sorry,
I was going to say, before we get into 10, I wanted to know, have you heard 15, the new theme for 15?
Yes.
The one that's like coming
the doctor,
out,
was... the specific Doctor's theme tune.
Yes, yes, the one from that was in the BBC Sounds special. They did the world premiere of Shooting Upwards theme.
Yeah, I did hear that. I think it's a little bit difficult sometimes to assess the music that premieres with the orchestra because they haven't done all of the, you know, potential extra synth that they might put into it. I liked his theme. It's not necessarily my favorite. Maybe that's a bit of a hot take.
We love hot takes here.
I really like themes that build. So, for example, my favorite companion theme is Roses because it starts off very soft and then kind of builds into something a little bit more, something with a little bit more heft to it. And I just don't really feel like 15's built a lot. I did love Ruby Sunday's theme.
Yes.
I thought that was really nice.
Interesting.
But who knows? Like maybe when we see it in action, maybe when we see Shuti Gatwa in action, like sprinting down a corridor with his theme playing, maybe then I'll stop being a hater. I'll be converted into a true believer. Yeah.
It is all about the corridor. This is fantastic. So you're interested in Ten's character arc. You're interested in Rose's developing theme, and you may have an interest in space and astrophysics as well.
That could become relevant fairly soon.
Yeah, is the fact that I have an astrophysics degree going to come back in this podcast? We shall see.
We shall see. Well, Pete, why don't catch people up on this weirdly random journey we've been having?
Yeah, enough of this forward-lookingness. Let's look back. Mm-hmm. So previously on Pull to Open, it's been quite a journey, folks. Okay, so the randomizer, I would actually say, has kind of been a little bit on the nose lately. Mm-hmm. So this all started really about a month ago, and we arrived at Human Nature and the Family of Blood. Now, that is a story that stars David Tennant. It's probably one of his best. And that actually put us on course for, you know, his big return in the 60th anniversary. Now that would have been enough, but then, believe it or not, the randomizer served up the three doctors. So, and that's of course the 10th anniversary special, sort of. But it was a strange coincidence that we had that podcast post right of the morning of the 60th special, the first one, the Star Beast. And little known fact, the three doctors features a black hole. Again, that might become relevant in a minute. But that was so on the nose. It was like a trip. So, of course, the randomizer took us to Nightmare of Eden, the drug episode of Doctor Who, which had a lot of drug dealing and nefarious characters and monsters made of drugs. Spoiler alert. But all that was happening.
Interject and say the randomizer really likes it when the doctor gets into a spacesuit because we have recently been to the Ambassadors of Death and... the Seeds of Death, both of which contain astronaut doctors, even though Seeds of Death, Patrick Troughton is naturally in a spacesuit. But
And rockets.
Yeah,
and rockets
and the mutants, I think the doctor's in a spacesuit and that. So like we've had a lot just to really amp up this foreshadowing.
Oh man, we can even go back to Frontier in Space.
Yes.
But anyway, we'd be here all day with all this space duty, but it's all recent and it's all Pull to Open. Go ahead, go back and check out those episodes. But... now the randomizer has taken us to another adventure starring David Tennant as the Doctor, going to the edge of space. In fact, if not the edge of reality, to do battle with some very strange creatures. No, it's actually not Wild Blue Yonder, which we just did a hot take on for the podcast. That was last week. Instead, we've come to series 2, episodes 8 and 9, The Impossible Planet. And the Satan Pit.
Yes, and I really couldn't imagine anything more appropriate, given all of that, given that long wind-up, and given our guest today.
Well, that's funny, right? Because, yeah. Ellie, this has been in the works for a while. Like, we've been trying to pin down a date, and it was just funny this date worked out. And then, boom, it's this one. Like, I mean, like, you know, we always say it's our running joke that we're scared of the randomizer because it's just so apt in, you know, most of the time. I mean, but the last month or two, I mean, wow. And this one in particular, it's just dead on.
Yeah. So. And I also have a personal, this may be a too personal question. Feel free to say no comment, but are you actually a Satanist?
I am not a Satanist.
Okay. That's just checking, because that would be really spooky. Because yeah, we're getting satanic with it, as well as astrophysical with it in our commentary.
All.
But
it's before all happening.
We get there.
Yep, before we get there. Well, by the way, if you want to cut right to the commentary on the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit, feel free to check the show notes and you can find the exact time code, the place to fast forward to where that commentary begins. But you won't want to do that, folks, because, of course, we have an all new Himoji Challenge. You want to join us on Poll to Open, where we talk about results for the three doctors. And there's lots more. It's all coming up in the Poll to Open Pulse Loop.
Of course, fetch it, Damon.
All right. Well, first in the Pull to Open Pulse Loop, we are on pulltoopen.net. That's right. We're on that World Wide Web thing. Subscribe to the newsletter. Get our full written notes on every episode, including our guests' notes, which is fabulous. You can also be a patron on Patreon at patreon.com/pulltoopen. We, in a very timey-wimey way, are about to review The Giggle. Rather... ourselves in the future, our not us, our not beings, our not monster versions in the immediate future will be reviewing the final part. And wow,
yeah,
wasn't that amazing, Pete? Loved The Giggle. Really,
well, that still happens. See, this
Harris did that thing.
This is happening to people listening to this in a few hours, and for us, it's a week from now. Time, it's all timey wimey. When you get into the podcast world, folks. But yeah, this will be our special sort of non-random hot take. We're jamming the randomizer for the last time. Maybe not the last time, because I believe there's another special coming a little later in December. We might have to sort of put the randomizer on hold for that one, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this will round out our trilogy of Tennant Tate adventures. And yeah.
And if you want to show support for our hot takes and the rest of the Pull to Open content, leave a review in the podcast app you're using, especially if it's Apple Podcasts. Feel free to leave 5 stars or 5 pentagrams in your reviews. That will make the show visible to more listeners, eager for great discussion of Doctor Who. And the only way to do something even better than that for Pull to Open is to share the podcast with a random friend or an enemy or a frenemy. You can also leave your review in the form of a Doctor Who title using emoji, which we then use to torture both me and any guest who might happen to wander into our trap. We've got one this week, Pete.
We set it off. Guys, it is time for a double contestant-ed Humoji Challenge. That's right. This is where we get to torture Chris and now Ellie Blackwood to give them. We're going to describe emojis for them. And I tell you, we will one day have the technology to show them to you outside of just the chat window, which I know is very tiny. But we'll put them there. And you guys will guess the Doctor Who show title. And guys, I'm not envious of the position you're in this week.
Oh, no.
So... we had one of our fans give us a few emojis a little while back, and he gave easy, medium, and hard. And I'm sorry to report, it's time for hard. This is going to be the hard one.
So I'm mostly undereducated on Classic Who, so if it's Classic Who, I might just be completely hopeless.
Well, that would be a hint if I were to reveal whether it was classic or modern, but those could come later.
We will need it eventually.
All right. Are you guys ready to get this going?
Let's do it.
All right.
So.
Three emojis. Ooh, that's three. Three is right. That's what three is. Okay. Three emojis. The first emoji. A brick. A brick emoji. It's actually more than one brick. It's bricks. But they're bricks. Second emoji. Fist. but it's the fist that's like forward, like punching forward. Okay. Then the third emoji is the repeat button, you know, so the two arrows looping back on each other.
Is it heaven sent?
It's heaven sent!
Yes, congratulations. I had the same thought at the same time. I'm like, yes, okay.
Was it the description of the fist that gave it away? Was it too much?
Yeah, it was like the bricks and then the fist, and I thought punching through a wall. Oh my god! Oh my god, one of my favorite ones.
But it was a glass wall, I guess. I don't know.
Well, wasn't it supposed to be like adamantium or some kind of element that's supposed to be 400 times stronger than diamond or something?
Yeah, that's something right. Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. They throw a bird in, because then there's some reference to a bird, some story about a bird in that.
So. Yeah, the...
You know, it's been so long since I've seen Heaven Sent, because I don't want to ruin it. I don't want it to be not special when I see it. So I've really only seen it twice. Once when it was first came out, and then once, like, probably a week later, just to kind of really take it in. And I honestly haven't watched it since, because I'm scared to not that it's going to get mundane, you know? So I'm waiting for it to come up in the podcast. It hasn't come up yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because... Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, of course, the new reigning champion of Best Doctor Who Story Ever, according to Doctor Who Magazine voters. But go ahead, Ike.
Yeah, I've also seen Heaven Sent only twice, once when it aired, and then once when I did a full Doctor Who rewatch last year, a full New Who rewatch, not full Doctor Who rewatch. And I remember on my second watch, it was still great. Like, I love Heaven Sent. But I remember thinking, man, you can really tell that the same guy who wrote Sherlock also wrote this. Because let's be honest, half of it is just in 12's Mind Palace.
It really is. Yes.
Let's be honest. I mean, it's great. Don't get me wrong, it's great, but
it is the reigning champion, as Chris said, in the Doctor Who poll, and you are now the reigning champion, Ellie, in the Emoji Challenge. So you take that back with you to TikTok and every other social network you care to brag about it. We'll get your personal emoji made so you can display it prominently in your profile.
Do I get to come back next week and defend my title?
Please, if you like. Yeah, absolutely.
Save me from this heaven-sent round where I have to punch a hole in the wall of the Humoji Challenge every week and then get vaporized and come back again the next week. But if you are on Spotify, you do not have to punch through a wall to tell us what you think of the particular story that we're discussing, because we have the feature poll to open. That's right, poll from the bottom of the screen right now, and you can rate The Impossible Planet of the Satan Pit before we've even talked about it. You can just go to all of our polls, all of our shows on Spotify, vote in them, vote early and often, because we keep those polls open. If you're in line, stay in line. And we've got some ratings to discuss now for The Three Doctors. People kind of liked it, Pete.
Like, people enjoy really? The Three Doctors. Look at this. So it got our highest rating by a mile. So more than half of the folks who voted rated it a Viscount banger, one of the best of the best.
Wow.
And comparatively, the fixed point in time, Chris, which was your rating, which is what we give to an episode of Doctor Who that's kind of beyond rating for whatever reason, that also came in second, around 30%. And then the Dalek, which was actually my rating, you know, a good episode of Doctor Who, is a distant third. Luckily, I kind of knew this, though no one rated it a bad episode or even a bad episode where we learned something. But you had, you kind of are the of the people here, you came out the most ahead because you went fixed point in time. And that was basically where a lot of people went.
Good point. Ellie, have you seen The Three Doctors?
Not yet. Okay, but I know it's the 10th anniversary special, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the closest thing.
It was not really broadcast on the 10th anniversary because they didn't really do that. But we'll come on back when you've seen it and vote in our poll and let us know what you think. I'm very, very curious. We often encounter this with Pull to Open, especially on TikTok. A lot of our followers are, you know, new to Classic Who, and we're kind of introducing these old shows. So I'm always fascinated by, like, what it looks like now, you know, the wobbly sets, the gel monsters with the bad bubble wrap. it's fascinating. But yes.
Yeah, honestly, in some ways, I'm a little scared of rating Classic Who episodes because they almost feel... In a way, I kind of worry that I'd end up rating them all fixed points in time because they kind of feel right. like... It feels almost blasphemous to rate them as, you know, a tiny little David Tennant and Matt Smith kid. You know, like who am I to rate, you know, the venerated show that came before the modern iteation of the show? I reacted to... I made a TikTok where I reacted to An Unearthly Child recently, and if I think about what I would have rated that, I don't think I can.
We'd have to get you on a spaceship at the edge of the universe with only Classic Who to watch and no way to reach back in the universe. So then you'll develop a taste and you'll be able to like boldly rate everything, I'm sure. So we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, go watch Time Flight and then tell me that it's not possible.
I might develop an evil clone of myself that will rate everything, honestly.
Yes. Yes, do a Tennant who now has so many evil clones of himself.
All right, folks, speaking of stories at the edge of the universe and takes on them, you can find our take on Wildly Yonder on a little place called YouTube, which is youtube.com/pulltoopen, where we have done our hot takes on the most recent specials. And of course, you can follow us there and follow the podcast there as well. It's a great place to leave an emoji title or a comment. And you can see all these great Easter eggs in the background and the lovely shirt Ellie's wearing, which is that a 11? Yeah, it looks like 11 because it's like the monsters of 11. Cause I recognize the new paradigm Dalek.
And there's a Silent on there as well, but yeah, it's like the Abbey Road album cover, but with Doctor Who villains. My brother got this shirt and then I went, I need that shirt. And so I ordered the exact same shirt.
Awesome.
Love it. And I've got my Satanic Sloth here, and I got the History of Hell and Illustrated Book of the Devil right here, because we're going to get into a little devilish commentary.
Yeah. Well, my shirt's the evil Dalek. I got my other Dalek shirt, but this one was like red on black. That feels right. That feels Satan bit. That's what I got to do.
Devilish Dalek. I love that. I love the idea of Daleks being Satanist. Hail Satan! But yes, also please follow us on TikTok, where you can listen to this entire podcast, the whole thing, on your TikTok app. Give us a follow, keep on commenting. We're Pull to Open there on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and Blue Sky. Not Blue Sky, we're Pull to Open 63 on everything but Blue Sky, where we're Pull to Open. And now it is
time. Well, hold on, give Ellie a follow on TikTok.
Yes, please.
What's your handle, Ellie? Ellie,
what is the handle?
My handle is at LooseLeafEllie, like loose leaf tea, because I like tea a lot. And it's also kind of a book reference because I was originally, and sort of kind of still am, a book talker. And I'm also on Instagram, same handle, at LooseLeafEllie, although I mainly talk about books on there. And, but yeah, mainly my Doctor Who stuff is on TikTok. But hey, if you also like books,
hey,
you know.
Who doesn't
who likes
like
books?
I mean, come on. Books, they're awesome. That being a quick PSA for books.
And, unless you have a planet full of them, because then it's a breeding ground for Vashta Narada, all right, guys? So let's not go too crazy with the books.
And
my quick book recommendation book recommendation for Doctor Who fans is my favorite ever book, This Is How You Lose the Time War. It's not that time war, but it's still cool.
It's a very cool time war. It's such a great epistolary novel. I can never know how to pronounce
epistolary, it. Epistolary, yeah. And it's a novella, so it's kind of short.
It's super short. It's a real quick read. It does feel a bit Doctor Who-ish in the sort of the romantic elements. I do. Yeah, I love that book. I'm with you on it. So follow Loose Leaf, and while you're there, maybe follow Lucifer Leaf. I'm not sure if there are any tea-drinking Satanists on TikTok. Surely there must be. It's the internet. If you can think it, someone's done it.
Maybe that's the account that my evil Wild Blue Yonder clone will set up when she gets free.
Yes, that's it. Lucifer Leaf is your account for when you want to denigrate Classic Who, or just listen to the show, because we do it all the time. All right, Pete, it's time. It's time to start.
Well, I stalled pretty well there by just simply for asking the handle, I think.
You did. So as regular listeners know, we start our commentary on our stories with a little segment we call TLDW. Too long, didn't watch too long Doctor Who. Too long probably did watch in this case. I feel like this is a one that you know, has been seen by many, many people, many new Who fans and old Who fans alike. But we allot 1 minute per new Who episode, and this is that rare new Who episode that's two-parter. So, Pete, you have 2 minutes this week.
2 minutes. It's your turn.
Unless you would like to offer Ellie some bribe to step in instead.
I'm too merciful. I just would never put any guest through the torture that is TLDW. Humoji Challenge, okay. That's fine. Because sometimes those, you know, they're just fun and satisfying. But this is just a thing you got to get through. And this week it's me. So let's do it.
That's right. It's time to see which rabbit holes you're going to fall down and spend 30 seconds discussing as we count down the official pull-to-open summary of The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit in 2 minutes, starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
It's the far future. The Doctor and Rose materialize on what's called a sanctuary base, which is this base that's on a planet. It's actually the planet that they find out after they encounter the Ood, which are these weird servant creatures, is actually orbiting a black hole. And there is a team of people there that are investigating because there is a power source way down below that they're mining to on this planet that is actually the thing that is keeping the planet there. It's this amazing power source that they want to use and basically figure out the secret of so that they can take back and power the civilization. But then all these creepy things start to happen. This guy Toby, who's the archaeologist there, who knows there's a civilization on this planet, or was once, starting to hear voices, and then he's sort of lured outside into where it's like the vacuum, or there's, you know, he's basically kind of taken over by this creature, and then he kills one of the other people, and then they find her dead. And her body sort of floats into the black hole. And then the Doctor goes with one of their scientists down once they've finished the mine shaft where the power source supposedly is. So they go down there and they're in spacesuits and they go. Well, then everything goes crazy and haywire on the station, and the Ood get all taken over by this beast that's talking through them. And it's this scary, scary voice, and it says it's Satan. And so the Doctor and the scientist end up going down into this pit because now they can't go back up because the thing that came out and is broken. Oh, and by the way, the TARDIS has been lost. It fell down a shaft earlier. And everyone's running around on the base, and it's kind of like the Ood are chasing them, and they're trying to cut them off with the oxygen. And the Doctor goes down into the beast chamber and finds it's this mindless thing. Meanwhile, everyone on the station gets in the rocket, anyone who's still alive, and they take off to get away from the planet. They have to leave the Ood there, but the Doctor busts the thing. The beast is the planet and everything fall back into the black hole, but he finds the TARDIS at the last second and rescues everyone. Unfortunately, just not the Ood, because the TARDIS is can deal with black holes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right. Here we go. 2 minutes and 14 seconds. Good job. It's tough. There's a lot. There's a lot to talk
about. Yeah, I was trying to sort of keep this is the thing. When I try to keep the structure and the pace of the story, you know, one thing happening before the other, I think that screws it up. I think often when I just abandon the story structure and just explain stuff, I can actually get through it in 2 minutes. But, you know, pretty close.
All right, yeah.
Lots. There was definitely a lot.
There is a lot.
Lots and lots of mavity in this particular episode.
Yes, Mavity is mentioned many times in this. And using the weird name Gravity, I don't know what they were thinking. It must be some sort of in-joke.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose. But honestly, it's really nuts how much this two-parter structurally is a lot like Wild Blue Yonder. So,
isn't it?
Like, you have, you know, the Doctor and Rose are at essentially this massive cosmological phenomenon. It may as well be at the edge of space, you know, that's kind of what that one is. But it's like, and they lose the TARDIS, right? In both.
Yep.
And
no mention of the Hads because he hasn't turned it on.
Yeah, and but it's like this kind of idea of going to this crazy remote thing where physics are even sort of out the window. It sort of raises the stakes and the peril to a point where you don't feel like they're very isolated, they're very powerless. Like I think this two-parter does a really good job of keeping that sort of suspense going throughout. I mean, there's the point later where they're convinced they've lost the TARDIS, like, for good. And even though, as viewers, we kind of know they haven't, we believe that they believe it. Even though, you know what I mean? Like, we don't believe that that's going to be the structure of the show, but they really sell it. And part of it is the sort of situational stuff they put them in. Like, just really, really smart framing of this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so many times the TARDIS have been lost, and never they've not really thought through the implications of the Doctor having to get a mortgage. Which is actually a nice connection to the Star Beast. Remember when we talked about the comic strip version of the Star Beast? It does end with this weird line about Sharon, the Doctor's companion, in that talking about how she couldn't imagine him with a mortgage, and he said, "I'd rather face a Dalek or a Draconian or something."
Hmm. So Ellie, like you've mentioned, you've grew up on Tennant and Smith. Do you remember watching this one for the first time?
No, I didn't actually start watching Doctor Who regularly as it aired until Smith's era. I saw this one I saw this one when I was pretty young, but it was more like I'd started watching Smith's era and I'd seen a few Tennant episodes. And so I was like, okay, I need to get caught up. My very first Doctor Who episode actually was watching The Christmas Invasion when I was 5. And it was so weird. The Sycorax prosthetics were so weird, and the sword fight and the hand getting chopped off was so weird that for many years I thought it was a weird fever dream that I just imagined. And then when I went back to, you know, when I started watching Matt Smith and I was like, okay, I need to catch up with the Tennant stuff that I missed, I watched that episode and I was like, it was Doctor Who the whole time.
Yes, that is great that you use that exact phrase, fever dream. That is what we have described Doctor Who, especially a lot of classic Who, as on the podcast before. And I certainly had the same experience growing up at that age with Tom Baker stories. That now I kind of look back and realize, like, I did not even know what was going on as a kid. It just sort of, it's these flashing images, and you're just like, what is this?
Is it supposed
to be this crazy? And yes.
So I was curious when I was asking you I was curious what age you were when you saw it, Ellie, just because I feel like this is a kind of a scary episode, right? And especially for kids.
I think I would have been about 12 when I saw this episode. So okay, like,
so still able to be, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't really scary, but so I liked that I was old enough to appreciate kind of what it was going for, because there's a bit of a philosophical component to it. You know, the Doctor and Ida have this sort of conversation about what do you believe, you know, and the Doctor asks her if she has a religion, and she says she's, I don't remember what she says.
Something like new Congregationist,
neo-Christian Congregationalist or something. Yes. And then she says, what do you believe? And he's like, I don't know, I believe I haven't seen everything. This is an episode that I really loved from my first watching it, because I dug the philosophy, I dug the suspense, the pacing in this episode is brilliant. And I have always, always, always loved space, so I love the ones that are set in space. And then I got an astrophysics degree, and now I rip them to shreds, but they're still very fun to watch.
That's funny you say, like, they did conceive this one partly because there was criticism of the first series that it was a little too earthbound. You know, a lot of people loved it, but that was one thing. There was only one, like, really, well, two, I guess, with the Parting of the Ways, but it was the same space station. So And here they kind of, I was just saying this about Wild Blue Yonder. I really like how Davies has been the showrunner to do these really big scale things. Like, I know he didn't write it, but the idea of like, well, let's go to a black hole. You know, what would that be? And let's sort of imagine stuff, and we'll get into sort of how close or how off it was, and what kind of works and doesn't from a physics standpoint. But just, I love the idea of like, oh, well, a planet orbited around a black hole, which sounds fairly impossible. And they just sort of put that in the title and let's do this, you know, let's see how this would go.
They lean into the impossibility. RTD's original idea was a little too on the nose, because the planet was supposed to be called Hell originally. Glad that they didn't, they said that it has no name, or it's called Cropped or whatever, but yeah, Hell would have been a bit like, I wonder what we're going to find here. Even so, I got to say, at the time when I watched this in 2006, it is hard to remember now that, you know, it was not, New Who was not automatically going to be a success. You know, there are a lot of Classic Who fans looking at it askance, and the fact that it had not had a lot of space-bound episodes in season one was part of that. But also, like, I came at this and I was like, okay, first of all, Doctor Who meets the devil. Are we scraping the bottom of the barrel here?
It's a bit Good Omens-ish, isn't it?
It was foreshadowing. We'd not yet gotten to Doctor Who Meets Santa Claus, which would come along later. That also seemed like the bottom of the barrel, but they always find somewhere around. So I kind of liked it, but you know, the thing that stuck out in my memory was how kind of meta this was, and not always in a good way. And because the opening where the Doctor and Rose get out of the TARDIS and they say, well, I guess we could just investigate, and if anything goes wrong, we could just come back to the TARDIS, and then they burst out laughing. That seemed like a meta step too far for me.
My hot take is that I really like that opening, and my other hot take is that Last Christmas is the best Christmas special, and everyone else can cry about it.
I agree with you. Yes,
I didn't
totally surprise me.
Mind the meta comment. It wasn't quite how you're describing it, because they're basically like, well, this seems like it could be a little fishy, and they're like, well, we could just go back in and go somewhere else. You know, and I think that's, it's less about, I'll agree, it is a bit awkward, but it is kind of like, this could be dangerous. Oh no, are we going to leave? You know, like that's kind of what I like about it. Cause like, hey, this whole thing is like, we just, you know, not to laugh at danger, but we know it's risky. Like, that's why we're doing this. And I also really like, there's a couple other meta things. Maybe you didn't, I like them. This might be one of the things where Chris and I have clearly different sort of takes on it, but where he talks about his, it's more fun that way when he doesn't know where he's going. Right. And there's a lot of sort of references, particularly when they're sort of new and they're just sort of figuring out who these people are. So here's, and I'll just sort of take a step back structurally on Doctor Who, why I sort of like this, because it believably, in my view anyway, wins the people over. Because most of the time in Doctor Who, when this happens, they show up and it's sort of a secure facility. Like, they get thrown in jail for half the episode. Yep. Right, they're usually in a cell, and then there's a lot of like convincing of people that they are who they say they are. They really can help in the situation. And here, I like that they skip that. There's a tiny bit of like being held at gunpoint initially by Jefferson, the older guy with the gun, but then quickly they're in the bridge and they're clearly very knowledgeable people, and they're just there. And it's almost like, well, we're all in this burning building. Like, why would we throw you in a cell now? Like, let's all just work together to figure out the problem. You know, yeah. I like that.
And is it all right if I skip back to like that first scene for a second?
Yeah, go.
Because so that sort of dynamic between Ten and Rose, where they sort of step outside and they're like, oh, should we go back in? It could be dangerous. I think one of the things that is very interesting about Ten and Rose is that they're, especially in season two, you get this sense of their hubris. They sort of build up this nonchalance about their travels together. You know, Rose thinks that she's totally going to travel with the Doctor forever. The Doctor hasn't really reckoned with the consequences of being so emotionally invested in Rose. And so when they get ripped apart in Doomsday, it's all the more tragic. But in some ways, it's kind of their own fault that it got to that point, because you see kind of multiple episodes throughout series two where they're kind of cocky. And there's a lot of people who don't like Ten and Rose's dynamic because sometimes they do get cocky. But I think that's kind of part of the point, that if you start getting too secure in your relationship with the Doctor, if you start thinking, oh, nothing can happen to me, I'm invincible, that's when you get trapped in another dimension and you can never be together again.
Mm. Yes, there are definitely echoes of what happens with Clara in her final season, that kind of cockiness. I think you're absolutely right about that. And yeah, this is kind of a pivot point for Ten and Rose's romantic dynamic, right? It's the first time they talk about the idea, oh, we'd have to settle down together and we could, you know, there's that kind of awkward, like, I guess we could live, we could share, maybe, and blushing and looking away. What did you guys think of the, did you believe the romance in this episode? And also, by the way, this is the first foreshadowing of Doomsday, right? Of the
dying battle. When the Beast says she's going to die in battle. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless you count the fact that the Doomsday theme plays when Rose first enters the TARDIS in her very first episode, but I think that I don't know how much of that was pre-planned and how much of that was Murray Gold being, I kind of like this riff that I used when she first entered the TARDIS. I'm going to use it for a composition that's going to make everybody cry. So
sounds like
probably the latter, yes.
He'd do it. Yeah. I think one of the other parts of this episode that gets me about Ten and Rose's romantic dynamic is that he almost says he loves her when he's being lowered down into the pit. He tells Ida, like, if you see Rose again, tell her, and he breaks himself off and he goes, oh, she knows. And then,
well, that's what I like. Down. I like that is like the balance to the scene you're talking about, Chris, because when it's kind of like that awkward moment and he's just kind of looking at her, you still not sure. I mean, you're definitely getting hints throughout the season that his feelings are deep too, but He doesn't really do anything, right? He doesn't even sort of reach out his hand or reassure her or whatever. He just kind of wants the comfort of their earlier banter and doesn't want to sort of go down this route. But then when he's forced later, like there's no TARDIS, the air's running out, it looks like he's going to die. He's like, you know what? I this is my sort of last chance. And he almost comes out and says it, but he clearly feels it. So it's a good, I mean, just really, like you said earlier, Ellie, well-paced and well sort of like thought out in terms of like the beats that are happening and when they're happening and how they pay off.
It's especially interesting given that 14 is suddenly decided that he says that he loves people now. He loves Donna. right. So he's maybe overcompensating for 10. I was also struck, by the way, by the fact that the only kiss that they share, the only moment of physical intimacy, is that Rose kisses his space helmet. So you've got the sense of a barrier keeping them apart. Again, perhaps foreshadowing Doomsday.
Yeah, there's also the speech that he gives to the Beast at the end is stuff that he doesn't say he loves Rose romantically, but you get the sense that he's sort of bearing his soul in a way that I don't know that he would ever say to Rose's face, where he says, you know, something along the lines of, I've seen fake gods and bad gods and demigods and would-be gods, but if I believe in one thing out of that whole pantheon, I believe in her. And this, that was one of those bits where, so the credited writer for this episode is Matt Jones, but obviously Russell T. Davies as the showrunner would have edited and maybe added some stuff. And I remember reading in The Writer's Tale, which is Russell T. Davies' sort of memoir / very long interview with Benjamin Cook, asking him all these questions about his time writing for the show. So Benjamin Cook asked him, so, you know, you do a lot of extensive revision on some of these episodes that you run the show for, and you've only with the specials did you start taking like co-writer credit for them. Are there any episodes from your past from you know New Who that you wish you'd taken a co-writer credit on but didn't? And he named The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit as two episodes that he wished he'd taken co-writer credit on. And that's not to say that Matt Jones didn't do a lot of work on it, because of course he did. But at the same time, that I've seen bad gods and fake gods and demigods and would-be. Yeah. That has Russell T. Davies' grubby little paws all over it. Oh, you just know that man wrote that line.
you know what else struck me as very RTD-ish was the resolution of the opening cliffhanger from the first cold and impossible planet, where the Ood come towards them, go, "We must feed, we must feed," and then the resolution is, "We must feed you if you are hungry." And I'm like, "Oh God, that's." And again, I want to say so. On my initial viewing, I was stopped by all these things, but watching it again, this happens a lot with Pull to Open. When we rewatch stuff, it's a lot lighter and better and happier. And I really enjoyed this time so much more than my first viewing. And I especially enjoyed all the moments where they pause and have a philosophical conversation about, you know, that feeling that you get in the back of your brain when you want to, jump off into something and talk about, primate genetics and this sort of urge to explore, this urge to fall, which is a very
right. And also thing to
say in the devilish context.
Also the Beast playing on sort of those basic fears, which the Doctor calls him out on, and sort of particularly, I think it's in the Satan pit where he sort of gets everyone to start panicking, and it's the Doctor gets to be the Doctor, right? Because he comes in with his like, no, he's giving you like, even though this creature seems to know about you and probably has some kind of psychic power, like it's painting that its way, and you need to look at yourselves at the whole picture and really see that yourselves as I see you, the best of humanity here. And it's like, it's a really, really good doctory moment. And Tennant has a bunch of them. Honestly, if you think about it, like this is Tennant's 8th and 9th episode, so he's had some time, but he's still pretty new. And I feel like this is a great showcase of him really starting to get his doctor. And Davey's starting to get his doctor, right? Because he's giving him the lines. And, there's the bit in the first episode where he hugs Zach, the commander.
Yeah.
And he expresses that admiration for humans. It's just sort of throughout. And like you said, all that sort of philosophical stuff, the stuff he, the back and forth with Ida later. Like, this is a really amazing performance by Tennant. And they give him a lot to work with here.
It's a very interesting choice to make Satan mute, basically, to have the Doctor basically doing a monologue rather than having a dialogue with this monster, which I think would have diminished it. But the idea of, he just doesn't have a voice and the Doctor has to figure it all out himself in a very sort of doctorish. And I love this sort of cross-cutting from different angles of the Doctor. He says, yes, no, what, no. And you see his thinking process out loud.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about those cuts, but I really love them. And actually, one of the things that I found out about this episode relatively recently is that I don't know how much of the speech this is referring to, but at least for part of Tennant's speech, they were filming in this cave, and they had like 15 minutes before they had to clear out and get out of there, and they still needed to shoot Tennant's speech, and he did it in one take.
Nice.
And completely saved their butts. And one take Tennant, and the guy is such a
doctor.
Yeah, the guy is such a pro. And you say it's his 8th and 9th episode. It might not have been the 8th and 9th episode he shot, because they do them in blocks, and I'm not sure.
Oh, that's true.
This was in.
Yeah.
So it might even have been an earlier episode.
Christmas Invasion too. It's probably his 9th or 10th if you think about it.
Yeah.
So guys, what do we think of the Ood? We've talked about them a bit. There's the intro where they have the "we must feed" and "you," and then they're evil, they're nice, then they're evil again. They get that great little tease with the what does the Ood say to the Beast and his armies? Well,
rise from the pits and declare war against God or something.
That's it. Thank you. I thought that was a nice line.
Yeah, the incongruous comedy of having them say that sort of thing where Rose is just coming up to them and like, oh, hey, I was a dinner lady. Are you a lady? And I love that the Ood just blinks at that.
So let me just qualify my question. Once I want to ask you, what do you think of the Ood as the monster? But also, what do you think of the Ood as an idea? Because there's all those sort of hints that are paid off, obviously not in this series of episodes, but later in Planet of the Ood, about them being a slave race and then, all the sort of morality that's attached to that.
I mean, I think the Ood throughout this episode are just being used by everybody, including the Beast, including the Satan figure, because it's probably very painful to have literal Satan living inside your head and using you to spread his message. But at the same time, they wouldn't be in that position to, you know, be used by Satan if they weren't also in turn being used by the humans. And I think one of the things that's very subtly chilling about this episode is that you've got Danny, who's the ethics officer or whatever he's called. Ethicist. And he hates the Ood. He thinks they're mindless beasts. And you can even, and you can see in this episode that they are, you know, intelligent beings who ought to be worthy of moral consideration. And especially in Planet of the Ood, you find out just the extent to which they've been abused and enslaved. But even in this episode, you can see that their situation is really quite horrifying. And I think, you know, it's Rose calls it out. Rose is obviously very uncomfortable with this. But even in the second part of the episode, she sort of there's a part where Danny's like, yeah, I can feed, you know, basic zero through their heads and counteract the signal from the beast. And she's like, well, go on, then do it. And I thought that was a bit weird that she didn't think, what's that going to do to the Ood? Because when they did it, they collapsed. That could have been very nice.
So much for her being a member of Friends of the Ood.
And then at the end, the doctor... The doctor has this line where he's like, oh, I couldn't save the Ood. And he seems sad about it, obviously. And it definitely seems like, you know, he had the choice, go get Ida or get maybe like one Ood and leave. So I understand that he had to make that choice. But one thing that I did think was quite lovely is that as the spaceship with the survivors is flying away at the end, Zach starts listing out the names of every single Ood, saying deceased with honors.
Right.
And it that finally feels like they're kind of being put on an equal level with the humans who died in this incident. But the situation is horrifying.
It's going to be a long list. Well, I don't know which deity we should thank for the fact that the Ood is not the Slitheen, which was the original idea.
The Raxacolica Salafatorians.
Yes.
Get it right.
Oh, I'm sorry. The other one looks exactly like the Slitheen, but isn't called the Slitheen. But they were supposed to believe that this planet held their deity. And what RTD eventually decided was that would just kind of distract a little too much from the plot. And thank goodness. Thank goodness also that he's a fan of the Sensorites. And that's the last time I've ever going to say that. Because that was sort of the original thing that they were based on. And if you haven't seen the Sensorites and you ever need to fall asleep for any reason, Pete can tell you it's a very good classic episode for that.
Best insomnia cure in Doctor Who, the Sensorites.
Yes. Noted.
So that's the origin of their sort of their... The Sensorites had little stethoscopy things, didn't they? Which I guess is the origin of the ball, which is also good for kind of distracting the eye from the mask. Like, your eye gets drawn...
Totally. It's such a weird thing. I really like the Ood as a monster. And one of the reasons is that little ball thing, because it's just kind of this accessory, and it's a little weird, and it gives them sort of something to do, even though it makes zero sense that they wouldn't have some kind of satchel or something to carry it with, right? Like they're just literally holding it. And you could, you know, headcanon that pretty easily. Maybe there's sort of more of a physical psychic connection you get, not just with the wire, but with the hand. But it's cool because, you know, it lets them use it as a weapon later, and they don't do that quite enough. They do it, I think, once, maybe twice in this episode.
They use it once to kill an unnamed member of the crew who showed up at the start, and then I think only showed up again to be killed. And I was very confused about that, because I don't think she... I think it was a woman. I don't think she was ever named.
Yeah. Oh, no, she has a name, but she sort of introduces, like, she's the intern or something.
Yeah, no.
Wasn't that Scooty?
Yeah, Scooty. Sorry.
Well, Scooty was the one that's spaced by Toby.
Yeah, this is someone completely different who I didn't even remember until I watched this episode again. And I was like, that's not one of the crew members that I remember. And she was just sort of there, and then she got killed by an Ood.
Yes.
Well, I will say, I think they did
a red shirt. Yes.
Again, the pacing, how they did it with the Ood, sort of friendly, then evil. Well, sort of tiny bit evil at the beginning, but then friendly, then evil. That works well. But also they crawl through those ducts like nothing else. I mean, for whatever that mask is, it clearly didn't prevent the actors from moving fairly fast. And I think the Ood worked pretty well.
A fine example of how this is sort of a very self-aware storyline, because they say, oh no, it's not actually a ventilation shaft. And in fact, the security chief says to Rose, I appreciate the reference.
Yeah, sure, it's not really, a ventilation shaft. Yeah, sure.
But it's right. Really, let's get real. It's a ventilation shaft.
But I think the Ood function mostly as a way to sort of help Rose in this adventure and sort of stand out. And I think this is actually a really good episode for Rose, partly because she gets to stand up for the Ood, but also that she sort of becomes, you know, kind of the project manager in the second episode for the whole thing descending the Doctor and Ida down. And she kind of becomes like this. She's got this. She becomes this like very active and decision making member of the crew very, very quickly. And, you know, even at the end there where she's like wants to stay with the Doctor and they have to actually literally knock her out to get her on board the rocket. I mean, again, this is all, I think, very good for Rose and her character. I mean, she's come a long way since she was kind of bumbling through the Shadow Proclamation declaration in the Christmas invasion, right?
She's for a chav, she's done really well. And yeah, it's quite amazing. It's you almost kind of want to see her more in that commanding role, which I guess she, by the time of the Dimension Cannon, you know, she's much more that kind of Rose. But yeah, you know, it's something
Rose kind of, with kind a machine gun. Start.
Indeed. Well, is it time to talk about black holes? I'm really excited
to enter the astrophysics corner.
Whoa. I hope we have a special jingle just for that.
Yeah. All right, Ellie. Tell us about this black hole. How insane is it? Okay, first of all, here's my first question. We'll get to the visuals of it because I'm really curious about that. But so the planet orbiting the black hole, it sounds impossible, but it's like, well, if you were far enough out, couldn't you? You know, like, I mean, it's just gravity. Is it really that impossible?
So Mavity, I don't know what this gravity thing is you're talking about. Right. That must be some kind of inside joke that we are not getting. Like I said, I have a degree in astrophysics. I also, science communication is my day job. My headphones just made a weird noise. Can you still hear me?
You're good. Yep. We can
hear you. Cool. Yes. I have actually made one or two videos about the science of Doctor Who. I've made one. There might be another one up by the time this podcast episode airs. So yes, I love thinking about the science of sci-fi. So I want to preface this by saying that I'm not trying to ruin the episode. I don't think that taking some liberties with science is bad writing. I think it can be used for a cool story effect sometimes. So I'm not trying to say it's bad. I'm not trying to say that it's ruining the suspension of disbelief for everyone or anything. I just think it's interesting to think about the science in fiction and how it compares to science in real life. So,
if Doctor Who's got the science more than 50% right, it's doing well.
I don't think I would take 25%, honestly. I'd take 10%, like, you know. Yeah. So yes, can planets orbit black holes? So when we think of a black hole, at its most basic, it's really just, like you said, it's a source of gravity. It's a really, really massive source of gravity, but it's still a source of gravity. So if you were far enough out and you were moving fast enough, you could totally orbit a black hole. So I believe it was in 2019, there was a paper about calculating how far out a planet would need to be and how fast it would be orbiting. If it wanted to orbit a black hole. There's a term called blanet, which is, it's a portmanteau of black hole and planet. So planets are planets that orbit black holes. So yes, in theory, blanets are 100% possible. And indeed, they're almost certainly a thing, because if you've got a source of gravity, there's entirely a possibility that something could be orbiting it. And in terms of stars, on average, there's a planet for every star. So having a planet for regular stars is the rule rather than the exception. So we can sort of extrapolate that to black holes and assume, okay, black holes probably very routinely have planets.
Pretty far out is what I'm sort of getting from you. Because that's where the impossibility comes in. Because it's like, clearly in the show, they're close enough to see it, almost like it's the sun for this planet. And I don't know how the physics works, but But the thing about black holes, it seems like you'd have to be further out, maybe.
The thing about black holes is they're actually very small, size-wise, because they're, it's the mass of a star, but it's scrunched up really, really tiny.
So
I guess relatively it would have to be quite far away, but in terms of absolute distance, it might not have to be that far. It does depend a lot on the mass of the black hole, which can be all the way from like regular star mass to there's an absolutely enormous black hole in the center of our galaxy called Sagittarius A star, which I believe is 400 million solar masses.
So getting back to the show, though, like what about this, the visual representation of this black hole? Is it, I know it's not, it's nuts, right? Because there's all this sort of plasma and gas and stuff. But like, let's really try to like work with it. Like they do say there's a whole star system that's being consumed. And even though they say that happens in a few seconds, you can kind of like maybe squint a bit and think like, oh, this is a thing that is just going on. And maybe it's going on for weeks or months. And maybe that's why it's a bit glowy. I don't know. Does that, if you squint, does that make any sense at all?
I mean, actually, the glowy stuff around the black hole is very much congruous with real life, because because a lot of black holes, if they're actively consuming material, will have this glowing disk around them called an accretion disk that does give off light. That's actually how we find a lot of black holes, because we can see the accretion disk even if we can't see the black hole. So even though there's a lot of liberty taken with being able to see like individual bits of debris being pulled in, the black hole itself, in terms of being able to see the accretion disk, that's not actually that bad. And if you want to see a really good depiction of a black hole, I would recommend watching Interstellar, because they did a really good job of trying to make the black hole look visually like a black hole might, based on what we know about the physics of black holes. So it's a little bit more complicated than you just have this black thing and then there's like a corona of glowing stuff around it. But the basic components is pretty much what you would see.
And the disk, the accretion disk, is that the same thing as the event horizon, or is that
no? So the event horizon is the event horizon is where the black bit starts. Okay. So
point of no return, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So the black circle that you can see is actually not like the heart of the black hole. The heart of the black hole is known as the singularity, and we think it's physically impossible for there to be a naked singularity where you can actually see the singularity. So we don't know what that would look like.
I thought it was a little weird that we had this two-part episode about a black hole, and actually the term event horizon is never said. But I think it's just implied that if the planet falls far enough, it falls into the event horizon, and then that's it.
Yeah.
So that's when you see it at the end there, and sort of it's only on the radar screen, and it sort of disappears, you just assume, oh, that's it. It's basically gone.
Yeah, it's crossed the event horizon and it's done.
Is it true, Ellie, that if you cross the event horizon, you get turned into spaghetti?
A spaghettification is a term for what happens when something is falling into the black hole, where basically it gets stretched really, really far by gravity. And I believe that spaghettification starts before you reach the event horizon. So it can get really, really nasty even as you're approaching the event horizon. And time also gets really weird when you get toward the event horizon. The episode World Enough in Time from the Capaldi era is based on that kind of weird time dilation stuff. So I was really, really excited when I saw that.
I was going to ask you, Ellie, perhaps as a PSA for our younger viewers, we're told in this story that looking into a black hole will make you mad if you just stare into it. If any of our listeners were to encounter a black hole, should they stare into it?
I mean, it doesn't give off any light, so I don't think there's any problem. It's just if the accretion disk was glowing really brightly, you might want to bring some solar eclipse glasses.
Okay.
That is a good tip. Also, check if Omega is on the other side, which I think...
oh my God.
There's the line that where the doc, you mentioned it earlier, Ellie, where he talks about... it just eats and eats and eats. And that's in response to Rose asking, well, I thought there were like other dimensions or other universes on the other side of black holes. And he kind of says, not this one, because
implying that there are somewhere you can go to another dimension.
In fact, he's encountered them, not to spoil anything for you, but I won't say any more about that. But there are some questions we need to answer about the impossible planet and the Satan pit. And those are, of course, the four questions to Doomsday. First question. Why did the randomizer take us here? And good God, why didn't it? I think we kind of been over this, right? The black holes, the three doctors, Tennant, Wild Blue Yonder. I mean, again, if you want a connection to Nightmare of Eden, where we're just at, like, I mean, I think you'd need some serious drugs to want to orbit a black hole at
8.84. Yeah, Nightmare of Eden was like the impossible hyperspace crash in that way. So, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
You got anything else, Chris?
Well, yeah, I mean, the connection to the Wild Blue Yonder, I also got a connection to Star Beast, rather the comic book version, because don't they talk about a black sun at some point?
Yeah.
I think the Beast talks about a black sun, which is what it's become a psychedelic sun in the TV version of the Star Beast. You know, speaking of needing drugs to orbit a black hole, definitely need drugs to orbit a psychedelic sun. But yeah, it's a black sun in the comic book. So that was a great connection. It's just, yeah, it knew about Wild Blue Yonder before we did. That's extraordinary. And it knew of Ellie's specialty. So thank you, randomizer, I guess. So yes, we should praise the randomizer. We should... I'm not sure if we should praise it as a deity or lock it in a pit for all eternity once we're done here, pulled to open and never let it be freed again, because I'm a little disturbed by its choices.
I almost said praise him, and then I remembered that that's a different episode.
There's so many episodes. It's like, yeah, you can't go wrong with a bit of praising the bad guy.
All right,
love
folks,
some religious horror.
Unless you have any other theories, Ellie, we can move on to the second question.
Oh, I think the randomizer just loves me. Because this is one of my favorite episodes, and I get to talk about black holes. So I think the randomizer just loves me. I like the randomizer. Wow. I'm not scared of it. Why are you scared of the randomizer? It's your friend. Praise him.
And your boyfriend now.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. We're to the second question. What if the evil plot had succeeded?
Okay, so the evil plot is Satan's. That's the last time I'm going to get to say that. The evil plot is Satan's to escape the planet, but he wants to... It's not quite... So he wants to go to Earth through Toby, the guy on the spaceship that's escaping the orbit of the black hole, but then what happens? So we all get like cool face tattoos, is that it? We all get to be like hipster face tattoo people, because it's in a language that you don't know. People are like, hey, what's that language in your face tattoo? Is that, oh, you probably, you know, it's from before the dawn of time, you won't know it. So
well,
that's
to think about like, exactly how it could even succeed, right? So Rose, even if she's out for a little longer and doesn't do the thing where she kills Toby, the doctor's still going to bust those things at the gateway. So everyone's still going to get sucked into the black hole. And I think what has to happen is the doctor has to be out for a little longer. So therefore, he's out too long. Ida dies. The rocket gets away. And he's just there with the Beast. So rather than breaking the prison, I feel like what happens then is he'll eventually find the TARDIS, and that'll kick off like find Satan in the 43rd century, you know, like an arc that no one asked for.
That does sound like a Big Finish special.
I mean, what if, so again, this is the 43rd century. We don't know how much technology on Earth has progressed. What if, so the Beast has the ability to psychically control the Ood. What if people on Earth have some kind of super advanced communications, like internet chip in their brain? Would the Beast be able to control that? Would we have like, would we have like Cybus Industries 2.0, but instead it's like Hell Industries 2.0?
Yes, it's clearly going to control us through the 5G chips in our brain via Bill Gates and of course, vaccines. We've got to get vaccines in there.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah. That's how you get the mark of the beast. It's a little weird because, you know, the doctor at one point seems to settle on the fact that he's not actually the devil. He's more of an idea of the devil, which is like, so that the idea is going to go out and infect Earth. Well, that's kind of already happened. So
maybe Toby's going to start a cult. Maybe Toby slash the Beast will start a cult and gain a massive following. And now you've got
No doubt.
A new religion.
Well, the thing is, the Beast, again, it's actually the Ood that says it, that its ultimate goal is to wage war against God, and it must have something in mind, whether that's, I guess, the people who imprisoned it or the actual God. I like the idea of somehow this sets off some kind of war for the 43rd century between the Beast and, frankly, the Doctor, who ends up sort of taking on the role of God by sort of marshaling everyone against it.
So. Yeah, we're getting a bit Moffat-y here, turning the Doctor into a god already. Well, but also, like, where's the White Guardian in this? Isn't the White Guardian basically God?
No, the Guardians weren't all powerful.
Oh, okay.
Stop confusing our guests with classic Who references.
sorry. Well, you don't need to worry about the White Guardian.
Okay, good.
I've heard of it. It's all right. So I think the Doctor is referred to as a lonely god throughout the RTD era, even. So maybe even if this was an RTD era type episode, he'd still be on board with letting whoever's writing the episode go a little bit. Also, how are we forgetting that it was RTD that turned the Doctor into Space Jesus?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's definitely the temptation, but it's weird, like the temptation of Space Jesus in this is, you know, that the temptation is to be so distracted by his love for Rose that he's not going to even risk her death. So like that's it. So sort of in action and wanting to save his friend is the great temptation. It's a little weird. The idea that he'd fall for that. But maybe if he did, then this kicks off the sequel, where, you know, instead of the Satan pit, we have, I guess, the God
complex.
God complex. Hey, there you go. Yes. I love that. You know, one thing about the God complex didn't actually contain God. Doctor Who has not yet met God in any form. So he's met gods, as he says.
Don't give him ideas.
Yeah, okay, RTD, don't call us on that one.
We don't want to go a season 5 of Supernatural. We don't want to go down that path.
All right. Well, I think we all like the idea of some kind of Satan cult or war that results from it. And that's a pretty good alternate Big Finish box set for Ten and Rose, assuming she survives that rocket trip. Moving on to the third question, which is, where is the Clara Splinter?
He built the ventilation shafts.
Well, I got her doing something similar. But of course, Clara Oswald splintered in time. At the end of the name of the Doctor, she's somewhere in every single Doctor Who episode. Where is she in the Impossible Planet or the Satan Pit? Which I'm glad you went there, Ellie, because there's not a lot of places for her to actually be in the episodes. So to have some kind of influence, she's kind of... unless she is that nameless, faceless person that got zapped by the Ood, which is not a great ending for our friend Clara.
She often dies kind of saving the Doctor, so...
True, that's true.
I don't know that would be all that out of character.
Yeah, maybe she's... she may be the one responsible in the TARDIS. We've noted the possibility that, you know, Time Lady Clara could be, you know, hiding in the TARDIS in some of these stories, because it is a bit convenient that TARDIS just happens to appear right there next to the Doctor when he needs it. It's a bit TARDIS Ex Machina. So that would be my vote, that Time Lady Clara is just maneuvering it, navigating it, perhaps from afar. Made sure that the Doctor had the TARDIS just when he needed it. And that the HAD system was turned on. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a possibility. So I had a couple, right? So one was, I was going to, what did they say, imprison the Beast? It wasn't God. It was like the Defenders like of some Light or something like that.
Legion
right?
of Light, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, well, let's give her the best job there, that she's basically the one who cut off Sauron's arm or whatever, and she was the key in doing that. That's a little, maybe a bit Mary Sue for Clara, even for Clara. Mm. So the other possibility I had is like, if anyone who grew up in the 90s recognized some of the sounds in this episode, it was the door sounds. And they're basically straight out of Doom, the video game, which I thought was genius. Mm-hmm. Because Doom, obviously, it's all about demonic forces taking over a remote base on some off-world planet or world. And so just to have that noise, I mean, it was just such a delight to sort of hear it as a person who played Doom. So I think Clara is a fan of Doom, and she was designing doors in like the 42nd or the 43rd century. And that's what I'm going to choose to believe. I think that's what she was doing.
I love that. It's also possible that she was the wife who was referred to many times with, right. Is it Mr. Jefferson, the security dude?
Yeah, did your wife ever forgive himself? You?
Yeah.
Well, she didn't.
Yes. Maybe she's there. Maybe she does send him a little message before the end saying that she does actually forgive him for whatever it was that he did. You know, maybe just the thought of her is what allows him to sacrifice himself nobly. Save the others.
We've got to send a little message before the end, and that is the message of what did we think of this episode? Yes, it's time for the pull to open rating system, which has six ratings. One, the Viscount Banger, which we give to a awesome best of the best episode of Doctor Who. The Dalek, which is a good episode of Doctor Who. The Ogron, which is a not-so-good episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hater, which is a not-so-good episode, but at least they tried something. We have the Lady Cassandra, paper-thin plot. But you know what? It looks good, and you might want to moisturize it a little. And there is also, what am I missing? The Fixed-Pointed Time. That's what we were just talking about earlier. It's something beyond rating, sometimes for reasons of nostalgia and sometimes for other reasons. So
maybe it fell into a black hole.
Ellie, the way we like to do these with guests is Chris and I'll do it, and then you'll either be the tiebreaker or the standout. So Chris, why don't you go for it?
All right. Well, you know, this definitely had banger potential. I will say that, which I did not expect to say when I started watching it, when we knew we were going here, because I said I wasn't a fan of it first time around. And as I was watching, I was like, is this a banger? Is it? Like, you know, with a lot of those, like, the philosophical asides, the science, like, it's got that potential. What knocks it down for me is, like, the padding. I felt like all the ventilation shaft stuff was, like, 20 minutes of padding. It's just a little too much. There was a little too much corridor in this, which is kind of also a summary of Doctor Who in general, but just yeah, a little too much corridor
there for a second.
Indeed, yeah. Way too much corridor. So I think that for me, that knocks it down to a Dalek. I think it's a very sturdy, solid, satanic Dalek with horns on its head, and it looks very fearsome, and it's giant. Perhaps not as giant as RTD wanted the CGI to be. Apparently, he wanted an even larger devil that we didn't get. But yeah, solid Dalek for me.
So I think you're right the first time. I think this is a banger. I wasn't quite sure. I didn't. I wanted to reserve my judgment until after we discussed it. But I disagree on the padding. I actually really like the sort of running through of ventilation shafts. And also, you also get this sort of heroic moment where Jefferson asked him to turn off the oxygen. And I really like the bit where Toby goes red eye for a second, because up until that point, you're even starting to question, well, wait, is he okay now? We're not really sure. And I like that they introduced that dramatic irony. And then you start to, as a viewer, invited to start piecing it together before they even reveal sort of the end. So it really sort of gets your brain going in a way, but not too much that it gives everything away. So I thought that was all really smart. And again, one thing we haven't raved enough about, honestly, I think, is the guest cast here. Because one of the things I really liked about this, and my whole family really liked it, but Jack in particular, who really, really liked it, he said this was one of the best episodes he's ever seen.
Wow.
Was he talked about how he really liked all the guest cast. They all were very distinct personalities. They were all good actors. And I also just think about this in sort of early New Who, doing this ensemble with a bunch of sort of younger and more diverse actors. Like, you think about classic Who, these mostly would have been crusty white guys, right? In any kind of quote unquote ensemble. But this was one of the first times in New Who they really kind of showed an ensemble cast in a modern kind of way, which to me levels it up from even everything we were talking about. So to me, this is a banger. And even though we've given a lot of bangers to Tennant, I think if we looked at the banger percentage in our codex, I'm tempted to not give him this one because he's got so many, but it's like, you know what? This was just really good. I was really into it. And so were my kids. So it's a banger.
Interesting. Ellie? Interesting. Yeah. I think I will say, by the way, just before we get to Ellie's rating, as an example of Base Under Siege, I think there are, you know, this is among the best of the best. As well as the fact that it sort of, you know, kind of deconstructs the whole Base Under Siege narrative and the identikit base, but yeah, really well-drawn characters, nice diverse cast. Definitely don't want to denigrate that aspect of it.
Well, I'm going to say it's a banger, so... That means I'm breaking the tie in favor of banger. I just think...
There we go.
So like I mentioned a couple of times, I did a full rewatch of New Who last year, and I was expecting my favorite episode of Series 2 to be Girl in the Fireplace. And I do still really like Girl in the Fireplace, but the Impossible Planet and Satan Pit took it for me. And rewatching it again for this podcast episode, it's just so good. I mean, it's not my number one favorite Doctor Who episode, but it doesn't have to be a banger. It's just great. And I know I spent several minutes picking apart the black hole science in this episode, but I honestly just like that it featured a black hole. I don't care if you say, like, there's a black hole and we went through it and then we found this meadow with unicorns in it. And also we got back out alive because reasons, or, you know, any kind of bonkers thing you want to do with a black hole. I just like the fact that there's a black hole in it. I like the fact that it's set in space. Even though the effects are kind of crappy, you know, those poor VFX animators in 2006 being like, oh God, we've got to animate this enormous beast. Oh God, we've got to animate like bits of planet falling into the abyss. Oh God, we've got to animate the rocket ship.
Let's just put that on the radar screen.
I gotta say that the CGI held up relatively well. Shout out to the mill for that.
Obviously Wild Blue Yonder just aired as we were recording this. Sure. I mean, 4K. they have a much bigger budget for Wild Blue Yonder, but let's be honest, it wasn't the best CGI I've ever seen, but in some ways that kind of makes it feel more like Who. I don't know.
So is this, before we move on to the randomizer, is this your favorite New Who story featuring a black hole? Is it better for you than World Enough and Time?
Oh, that's really hard because I do love World Enough and Time. I think it just about edges out World Enough and Time, even though I like the black hole in World Enough and Time more.
Nice.
Yeah, it might probably be the nostalgia.
You heard it here first from a black hole expert, everyone.
Yes.
Best black hole in New Who, the Impossible Planet.
The best black hole in New Who is World Enough in Time, but the best black hole episode.
Okay.
The best black hole episode is Impossible Planet and Satan Pit. That's the nuance there, yeah.
Well, I got you. The best black hole, but this is the best black hole episode.
The devil is really in the details of this one.
It really is. And it might be partly because of nostalgia, because obviously I have more nostalgia for Tennant than I do for Capaldi. So that probably helps it out in a way. But
sorry, but we need to surround this black hole with a Dyson sphere or something and bid goodbye to
it. We need to escape. We need to escape off our gravity well.
Indeed. And we have to rush into our time ship and activate the randomizer. The randomizer, of course, consists of two components. The codex, which is a list of every single story of the show Doctor Who in sequential order. And there are now 304 of those? What?
What? Yes, because Wild Blue Yonder has been officially added to the list. I don't know if we should also officially add the giggle yet. Probably not.
Probably not. We're good. Probably we're good not. For now, even though it's airing tonight. The one people hear it.
Indeed. Okay. So we have two components, and Peter's at the controls of one of them. That's the Codex. That's the Devil You Know. And it is the complete list of all of the Doctor Who stories in sequential order. Pete, how many do we have left to do now?
Well, now that I have knocked out the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit, we are once again at 199.
Wow. All right. We're stuck at 199. We're in geostationary orbit around 199.
That's 100% the right way to use that word.
Yes. Victory. All right. So I use random.org. That is the other component that is the devil that you don't know, because it uses atmospheric noise to produce a truly random number instead of the pseudo randomness of algorithms. Ellie, are you familiar with the use of atmospheric noise to create randomness?
I can't say that I am.
Okay, I didn't know if we could have some scientific insight into that. We will leave it.
That feels like more of a mathematician's purview.
Yes. All right. Well, we do have the purview to ask questions of the randomizer, to worship it as a deity and leave offerings at its altar. Ellie, where would you like us to go next? What kind of story would you like to see?
Oh, good question. I think a space story. I like space.
Okay. Space story. I think there are a few of those in Doctor Who history.
Yeah, yeah. But specifically a space story, I think, set in the far future where there's some kind of cool space technology going on.
When they're all whizzing about and there's teleports and it's not really that hard.
Yeah, yeah. I want a far future space story that has some kind of commentary that is relevant to us today, whether that's some kind of philosophical, religious sort of aspect, like in the Impossible Planet and Satan Pit, or whether that's something a little bit more like taking down capitalism, like in Oxygen, you know, something of that nature. Okay. That's what I want.
Okay. So a space story with an edge.
Yes.
Got it.
The political edge.
Philosophical, political, social edge, yes.
So what are you going for, Chris? What's your challenge?
Ooh, well, we've done the Doctor meets Satan. Let's have the Doctor meeting another mythical figure.
I think it's the last Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is December. It is getting close to that time. It might be time to do Last Christmas. I do love it. You know, speaking of stories that really wrong-footed you about the Doctor meeting mythical beings. So give us some myth. Give us a hit and myth.
Well, my challenge is anything but Tennant. We've had too much Tennant. That he is so greedy. He's like been the Doctor twice. He's been regenerated like three times, or now probably going on four now. He's been in, like, I don't know, three out of the last four things we've done, at least. I mean, let's give him a break. There are other doctors.
He's had, like, a bunch of uncredited roles in Big Finish audio dramas from before he was the Doctor.
Doctor Who Unbound.
He did the commentary of this one. I listened to the commentary. He's everywhere. He's just overexposed, that guy. There are other doctors. Let's come on.
I love it that we've all chosen such a broad category that it's very likely that two of us will be right. So let's see what happens as we pull down the lever on the randomizer. Pete, give me a countdown.
Let's do it in 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't blink.
142. We're in New Who.
Deep into New Who. 142. Takes us to no way.
Not what?
A Christmas Carol. It's space for future. It's not Tennant. And
there's kind of some philosophical aspects, you know.
Yeah, very much so.
But you know, I mean, you got Space Scrooge, so there you go.
Yeah, it's and that's a bit mythical. Like the space whales, they're pretty mythical.
Season. We were just saying this is I forget when this is going to upload, but in the Christmas season, certainly. So Wow.
Aww. We all got our wish.
A randomizer. Yes. It's a Christmas miracle. It's just so appropriate. And the randomizer is getting Christmassy with it. I wonder if this is the randomizer saying what its favorite Christmas story is. But yes.
Guys. Important.
Yeah. This has been fabulous. Thank you so much, Ellie Blackwood, for joining us on this commentary. And thank you, listener, for listening. This has been Pull to Open. It's a podcast. Podcasts are great things to follow and subscribe to. So why don't you go ahead and do that in whatever app you happen to be in. You can also follow us on YouTube at youtube.com/pulltoopen. And that's a great place to follow us, even if you already follow us on one of the podcast apps. It really supports the pod if you support us there too. Thank you, Martin West, as ever, for our music. Please leave a review in whatever app you're in, if you're able to do that. Follow us on social at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Pull2Open63, Blue Sky at Pull2Open, and of course, TikTok at Pull2Open. And Ellie, give me your handle again, because it just completely left my head.
At Loose Leaf Ellie.
Loose Leaf Ellie, that was
Loose
it.
Loose Leaf Ellie. All right. Well, this is fabulous. I'm looking forward to our trip to a mysterious planet. Not an impossible one, but a very strange one with space whales and cryogenic storage. And we will find out next week if Christmas has, in fact, been cancelled.
Thanks, everybody.